What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and regular guest on the show, Jack Manuel. Guys, happy Halloween.
Spooky season.
Amen to spooky season. This is a day after we saw the Nets and Pacers live. One
you
of
had
us
to bring it up.
There.
Yeah, you had to bring it up.
Hey, I'm the only one that's happy. That's the unfortunate part.
Jack, should we do this alone or what? No.
Oh, yeah, we'll just do a Brooklyn Buzz spinoff.
Yeah, obviously, we're all at the game. That was great. Giving you another podcast right here, maybe another one this weekend. We'll see what happens. But a lot to talk about. We were at the game, and it just felt like the NBA was super crazy. We'll talk about the fight first between Karl-Anthony Towns, Joel Embiid. Both guys suspended two games, and someone who was, I would say, definitely involved didn't get any type of suspension. That was Ben Simmons. First, we'll talk about the reaction to the fight, and then we'll talk about suspensions.
So the reaction to the fight was, we were all sitting next to each other. I get a notification from Bleacher Report, and I'm just like, yo! And I'm just like, this is like some 1990s Meta World Peace shit. And it was just absolutely insane. And then, I mean, the social media wars after, I was up to like just 2 a.m. just waiting for all the responses on Instagram and Twitter. It's a wonderful league that we all follow. But yeah, in terms of the suspensions themselves, you know, I was a bit surprised, and you know, chatting a little bit to Corey off wax, that, you know, obviously Ben Simmons didn't get anything, and the severity of it, I would have thought there would have been 3 or 4 games if we're comparing it to a recent sort of bust up in what happened with Brandon Ingram, Chris Paul, and Rajon Rondo last season.
Yeah, I mean, as they say, things got brazy, right? I think that's the right word. You know, well, we're 5 games into the year, and we already have our first fight. And also, like, a pretty interesting fight in the situation of that you have arguably the best center, and then Karl-Anthony Towns, who's been on kind of like the case to be one of the top 3 centers in the NBA, if not the best this year. So like, it was kind of cool for the fact of like, it's those two guys going after each other. Towns also like trying to be, I think, a little bit more tougher. Obviously Embiid, it started because Embiid kind of threw a little bit of an elbow through his body into Towns, and Towns, obviously they were down by 20 getting their asses kicked, was like, I'm not like, you're not gonna like, you know, bully me or rook me, and then threw that punch. And as we saw, things progressed. Ben Simmons not getting suspended, as you guys both said, very strange, because he said, you know, quote unquote, he was just a peacekeeper. You know, granted, I don't know how you guys keep peace, but generally they're putting someone in a sleeper hold, not really so peaceful. But you know, and you know, Towns tapped out too, so maybe that's why he tapped out.
Maybe
soon. But yeah, no, it was compared to what you made a good point, Jack. The Brandon Ingram, Chris Paul, and Rondo situation; those guys all got like 8 games, 5 games. Now, granted, there was some spit thrown, but you know, there was a punch thrown, and as Jay Christian tweeted, it looked like a scene from Kill Bill when Joel Embiid started trying to pry out Towns' eye with his finger.
Oh yeah, that was wild. I'm surprised. Like, I guess they're not really like looking super details. I was surprised with the 2 games as well. And the rumor is that Joel Embiid has been like bragging that he owns Karl-Anthony Towns around the NBA. That's been like the rumor, and it's gotten back to Towns. So there's already some like bad blood between those two. And I think last night, like Corey mentioned, you know, give him the little elbow, getting kicked in the butt, like just not a great game. And he was just sick of it. And how do you guys feel about it from the Karl-Anthony Towns perspective? Is this the type of pop you kind of want to see from him, or he went over the edge?
Oh, I mean, obviously it's going over the edge slightly, but I think Joel Embiid is that type of player that does get into your head to an extent. I think we've sort of seen this leadership and aggression from Karl-Anthony Towns on the court before he came up against the Sixers. He's looking far more engaged, and you know, probably, you know, it's been spoken about quite a bit. I know you guys are talking about it in the outlet as well. He's playing like an MVP contender. You know, he's leading the Minnesota Timberwolves into new heights, and he's been playing some insane basketball. Obviously, Joel Embiid got the upper hand, no pun intended, last night. But at the end of the day, I think Minnesota fans would be happy to see this. Now, obviously, there is a line, and it was crossed to an extent, but, you know, the back and forth on Twitter is fun as well, and Instagram. The funniest thing for me was that Joel Embiid tagged Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy Butler responded, he's like, why are you going to drag me into this, bro?
Yeah, the social media aspect was fun, right? So you have, obviously, Embiid goes with the, I'm in, you know, I have real estate in your head, same thing he did with Andre Drummond, which obviously, as we all joked about last night, you know, this was supposed to be a I'm done trolling season, right? Like, no. I'm past that. I'm trying to win now. Obviously, that's not the case. And as you mentioned, Jack, funny him bringing in Jimmy Butler to the situation. But also, this is why I think it was a good move by Towns, right? So Towns has, I don't want to say officially the label, but we all kind of, at least from what Jimmy Butler gave us as a perception, is that Towns is soft and weak, right? This isn't a tough guy. This isn't a guy who's going to do much. Like, he's a little bit of a, just soft, right? So this was a good move for Towns, pretty much saying, like, I don't care what was said about me in the past. Like, I don't care, you know, what someone may perceive me as. Like, I'm not soft, right? I'm here to win. I'm here to try and be the best at my position, and I'm not going to take some shit from a guy who pretty much acts like a bully. So I think in that standpoint, it was good for Towns just kind of like standing up for almost himself as a person, because he has, I think, this label, at least perceived label, of being soft because of what we knew transpired with him and Jimmy Butler last season. So I think that was good. And then the social media stuff, you know, Towns going back at him and saying, like, I was born in Lions, and then showing, like, the crying face at the end. Like, it's grade A entertainment. The NBA does not seem to disappoint with on the court or off the court actions.
Yeah, it's a major storyline week one, and the NBA as the association doesn't seem to care, only giving these guys two games. So not saying we're going to see a ton of fights this year, but it's not terrible they didn't get punished. And like you guys mentioned, social media has been fun, and I like Karl-Anthony Towns kind of taking that next step and be like, hey, I'm here too. And like you mentioned, Corey, Jimmy Butler kind of putting shade on him last year, and can he be that number one guy? Can he be a leader? Is he soft, or is he going to be a guy that gets in your face? Last night he was a guy that got in your face and more. But anything else on the Minnesota and Philly situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really going to affect teams that much, the fact that either of the teams that much, because they're only missing two games. But it's almost like a blessing in disguise for a guy like Joel Embiid. He gets two games off to sort of rest his body a little bit. I think it hurts Minnesota a little bit more.
It's guaranteed two losses for Minnesota almost.
Yeah.
I would agree. I don't think it's anything major to write off. Just like, I think they put the target on Ben Simmons' back, though. And also, this game, I think they rematch is in March.
March 24th, I believe.
Too long.
Wait.
Get it? All-Star
game.
That's an
important day, no?
What's that?
Oh, no, it's not. It's after. That's after.
Well, there's they could reunite at the All-Star game as well, because you'd expect both of those players to make the All-Star team. Ben Simmons, too. So it depends on how the All-Star system is. They could be on the same team. They could be on opposite teams. True. But the cameras will be there for that, and that will be mighty entertaining.
Yeah, they'll probably get D'Angelo Russell on the Timberwolves by then, but that's a different
We'll see what happens. Talking about D'Angelo Russell, perfect segue there. Thank you, Corey. Going to Golden State, Steph Curry broke his hand last night, and super disappointing news. Obviously, Golden State's off to a bad start, but literally one of the best players in the entire NBA and probably the best shooter ever is going to miss a significant amount of time.
Yeah, Aussies are out here just doing damage last night. You know,
I never liked Aaron Baines.
Well, I know you don't like Aaron Baines, and I've always been a fan of Aaron Baines, but it's on the NBA rules and the basketball rules. It wasn't his fault. But in terms of how it affects the Golden State Warriors, you know, Joe Lacob says that they don't want to take and goes against what they've done. But I don't know, 2011-12 says something different to where they got Harrison Barnes. So, I mean, I think that they don't necessarily even have to tank, because they don't have a good enough team anyway to challenge in the Western Conference. You know, D'Angelo Russell and Draymond Green as a combination is going to be interesting. I think D'Lo is going to frustrate the hell out of Draymond and to the nth degree. And Draymond is just going to be a frustrated guy in general. He said the other night he's got a bit of a sore back, and I think, you know, he's going to be carrying that team. That back is going to be sore for a very long time, Draymond, on the defensive end and offensive end too. He's going to have to put up triple-doubles on both ends of the floor. So, yeah, it's a sad sort of state of affairs. We don't like seeing the stars go down. You know, Trae Young, Stephen Curry, we want these guys to be healthy for as long as possible. But hopefully he's back sooner rather than later, so we can see him do his exploits. We love what Stephen Curry does on the basketball court. But, you know, should the Warriors trade D'Lo to T-Wolves? Should Draymond be traded? Should the Warriors tank? There's a lot of questions surrounding just one injury that has multiplied with the Klay Thompson and all the other ones that are already happening in Golden State.
Yeah, I mean, I was stuck in traffic coming home when this news happened, so I got to, like, sit for a second, and I was stopped on the highway to watch what transpired. Definitely, like, what's one of those freakish basketball plays, right? You know, Baines falls on top of Curry, Curry's hand gets caught up, and now, you know, we're going to see how long he's out for. And you made a good point, Jack. They may not be actively tanking. This roster without Stephen Curry is actively tanking. I mean, the roster is not very good. You're going to have Jordan Poole probably taking 20 shots per game with a green light. D'Angelo is going to have to do a lot more. And honestly, I think it makes D'Angelo getting traded just a little bit more likely, I feel like. And then also, like, Draymond, like, you know, I feel bad for Draymond, because now, like, we're going to see Draymond have to put up, like, 15 to 20 shots a game almost, I feel like. So I can only imagine what that shooting percentage is going to be. I would also, like, if he's hurt or banged up, I wouldn't let him play if he's not 100% at this point in time. Like, I just don't see the point of being like, all right, Draymond, your back is sore. I know he had, like, a bad elbow after game one. Like, putting him out there when you're probably going to lose. Because even with Curry, this team wasn't stopping anybody defensively. Like, their defense has been wretched from start to finish so far this season. So, you're actively looking at the next season. Their pick that they got from the Nets is like 1 through 20 protected, right? I believe, or something like that. So they're probably
they sent to the Nets. So the Nets aren't going to get it.
Right, bye bye. Yeah. So 1 through 20 is protected. They're probably going to get that now. I would be shocked if things change so dramatically they end up making the playoffs. It's an unfortunate event. I hope Curry gets back soon. And also, like, you know, not that the dynasty is truly over, but it just shows how fast things change, right? The Warriors were coming off 5 straight NBA final appearances, five straight. And now, you know, they're not going to make the playoffs even. And who knows what this looks like going forward. Now you have two of your stars coming off of somewhat major injuries, a fractured hand and a torn ACL in Klay Thompson. It was unfortunate to see that transpire last night, and we hope Curry gets back soon.
Yeah, first off, it's always terrible when one of the best players and any player goes down with an injury, and a significant one. I think it also points to, you mentioned resting Draymond. Those 5 straight finals have not resulted in healthy bodies for a lot of those players. Steph's now injured. Klay tore his ACL. Kevin Durant tore his Achilles. Obviously, he wasn't part of that entire dynasty. But I think those miles are starting to catch up. So I'd be very precautious with Draymond Green, because it's just like they played extra seasons going to the finals 5 straight times. And you guys mentioned it. Like, they're not going to be a good team. They weren't going to probably be a good team even if Steph was healthy. Maybe they'd find some type of rhythm, but they kind of proved in these first couple games there's really just not enough good basketball players in that team. And I think it's going to be really tough, like you mentioned, for Draymond, but also tough for D'Angelo, because this Golden State team without Steph Curry is definitely worse than the Nets team he played on last season.
Easily.
I would say, just like, if I'm the Warriors, you know, with all the injuries, this feels like a team that just looks at the free agent market right now, and they look at guys like Carmelo Anthony, Jamal Crawford, like Joe Johnson if he gets healthy, and they just say, screw it. Let's bring in some of these old guys maybe just to, like, sell tickets. Because, like, this is also a really bad start for a new arena to start, where your major marquee player is out and your second best player, Klay Thompson, wasn't going to play the entire year already. So I wouldn't be shocked if they tried to sell seats by going after some big name, like, older free agents.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure what they're going to do in terms of, like, their salary cap and how they can move it with the roster space they have. It'll be interesting. In what scenario do you think they would consider sitting out Steph Curry for the entire season, or there's no scenario that would happen?
Oh, I think that Stephen Curry is going to want to play basketball. You know, if we're comparing it to other guys in the league right now, Kevin Durant obviously is a far less likelihood, and he spoke to Stephen A. Smith today. He said that he's very unlikely to be back. He said that he's not coming back. His words, not mine. So I think that at the end of the day, whatever player is medically cleared, these guys are hoopers and they want to play basketball. It's their livelihood. It's their drive. It's their passion. It's what, you know, motivates them to get up every day. They want to hoop. And Stephen Curry is a pure hooper as well. He's one of the most artistic, gifted basketballers that we've seen in the last few decades. So when he is healthy, he's going to be back sooner rather than later. So obviously, we don't know the timeline just yet. But, you know, a broken hand, it's going to be a couple of months. And hopefully, we can see him shoot some threes, because he's one of the most entertaining players to watch when he is on. You know, I got the lucky chance to see Kyrie Irving last night for the first time. And he's the most entertaining player I've ever seen in person. And hopefully, one day, I get the chance to see Steph.
I think Curry does play at some point again this year. As you mentioned, Jack, this is a competitor. I wouldn't be shocked, though, if when he does come back, maybe he's on, like, a 25-minute restriction. Realistically, this team could be, you know, 20 games under 500, arguably, when he gets back.
Yeah.
I think they'd be really cautious to give him, like, you know, regular starter minutes, like 30, you know, 35 minutes a game. I'd be shocked to see him playing big minutes if they're that far out of it.
Yeah, and a lot with the injury is going to depend if he needs surgery or not. He could be back quick, and then obviously if you break your hand, you can stay in good physical condition. It's just like you're not used to shooting the ball, but it's not really an issue.
And the good thing is it was his left hand, correct? Not his
shooting. Yeah. So, and it is Steph Curry. Like, he probably could shoot with one hand if it was, like, the finals or something. I honestly wouldn't put it past him. But other than Steph, we had a crazy game between Houston and Washington. Corey showed me this while I was driving, and I really didn't believe his score at first. 159-158, Houston beats him in regulation, no overtime.
Yeah, Nick, Aussie Nick messaged me today. He's like, did this like happen? I'm like, yeah, but you guys scored 158 points too. And I'm like, he's like, yeah, I guess. Immediately, as soon as I saw it, as I was walking out of the arena after popping my new hat from the swag shop, I was like, is this actually an OT or a 4OT score? Like, it's insane how many points, a combined nearly 320 points between the two teams. I mean, it's funny because James Harden said after the game as well that the reason why they won was defense. I'm like, I don't know about that, James. But it's a wild occurrence. And I think it's like the fourth highest score in NBA history. I think the highest score for both teams in their franchise's history. It's wild stuff. And I mean, you expect it to come from the Houston Rockets, who are one of the more offensively gifted teams of recent millennia. But to come from the Washington Wizards, it's certainly surprising. But they've been doing some surprising things of late, but they can't get the wins on the board. And I know my boy Nick was disappointed, but you know the Houston Rockets are starting to figure some things out, at least offensively.
So I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast today, and it was funny because he was talking about how OKC scored 140, 2 points against the Rockets or whatever. And he was like, they scored 142 points in the four quarter games. Like, that's unreal. And I'm thinking, well, wait, Bill, until you talk about the Rockets and Wizards scoring 159 to 158. Yeah, I mean, no defense, absolutely no defense. Ridiculous amount of scoring. Both, you know, I think the Wizards actually shot 62% from the field and the Rockets shot 51%. Obviously, James Harden had 59 points. They were down to 148 to 139 with 2 minutes to go, the Rockets. So it was a comeback win. You know, James Harden kind of going berserk near the end there. Russell Westbrook doing his thing. And I will say, Bradley Beal, obviously big time. And then Nick said this when we were in the car, you know, it's unfortunate that we really can't see Bradley Beal traded this year. Like, it's unfortunate that we literally have to watch 49-point performances and losses in Washington. And also, I want to give a shout out to Isaiah Thomas because he had a double-double in 24 minutes, 17 and 10, and was 52% from the field shooting. And that's good to see because we know he's had a really rough couple of years.
Yeah, nice to see that from him. But you guys are right. It was just crazy. If someone asked me before the season, what's more likely, the Wizards to score 158 in a game or have back-to-back games where they score 79 in both games? you know what I mean? It's more likely they would score this in two games if you asked me before the season. I did not imagine a Wizards team even being capable of putting up 158, even if it was probably double overtime. So I was just mind-blown by this. And I guess you give them props. A lot of the guys stepped up and they shot a good percentage. And Houston's not going to play defense. You know, you take your shot.
So I think that's the question, right? What does this game speak more to? How bad the Rockets' defense is and how maybe they're not as good as we thought they were? Or does it speak more about the Wizards being better than we thought? Like, what does this game, to you guys, say more?
Oh,
it says the Rockets are a shit defensive team.
Yeah, I was probably going to go with that answer as well, my friend. Maybe not as blunt and as crass. Maybe using a little more eloquent with my terminology. But yeah, the Houston Rockets defensively certainly have some issues. I mean, so do a lot of teams. And I think Nick can attest to that with myself as well. But I think it's also quite surprising from the Washington Wizards end. You know, like we were sort of talking about and Nick was alluding to, this is a team that isn't stacked with offensive talent. You know, you mentioned, you know, Isaiah Thomas, Corey. Good to see him go back to some form and get some confidence going forward. Bradley Beal, we know what he can do. He's just a supremely talented offensive player. But I do think it speaks more to the more talented team that you expect more from. You expect the Houston Rockets to be a better basketball team. So to give up this much points, whereas we don't expect, you know, the Washington Wizards to even be close against this Houston Rockets team. So the fact that they were more surprising in terms of their exceeding expectations on the offensive end. So, but it is more of a disappointment from the Houston Rockets in their defensive, on the defensive side of things.
Yeah, you're right, Jack. It definitely is a bigger disappointment, but it's almost like not that big of a surprise because we've seen Houston in the past start seasons like really bad and just like not play any defense. And if you're allowing 150 points against the Wizards, you're just not trying. And I think that's what it says. And it's like, hey, guys, you actually need to put some effort in. But still on Washington's end, very impressive. And then just an overall thought about the league like so far in this early week of the season. It feels like every team in the league is like pushing the pace more and shooting more threes and trying to score the ball a lot. And this is kind of evidence of that.
Except the Sixers.
Okay, yeah, except the Sixers. But
yeah, they just play 85 to 90 games. They're playing 90s basketball.
It also looks like a collective issue around the league that teams are really struggling defensively.
Yeah, and I'll just clarify my statement. Not even the entire league, but every bad team, I think, is like, hey, we're bad. We're going to push the pace. We're going to shoot a lot of threes. We're just going to try to give ourselves a chance, and that makes sense. And like you said, Corey, every team, it feels like, I don't know what teams are playing great defense, maybe other than the Sixers.
At the end of the day, in this league, and whenever you watch basketball as well, and I think we said it a couple of times last night, good offense will always be good defense. Always.
Guys are talented. But anything else on the Wizards and Rockets?
No, I just, you know, hopefully the Washington Wizards got all the points out of the Houston Rockets, because I'm going tomorrow, and I hope they don't score as much as that, because we will certainly concede that much with the way we are playing defense.
Yeah, I think hopefully they're a little bit more tired. But you guys, before the season started, dropped OTG's top 50 NBA players. Excellent list. You can find it on the website. You can find it on Twitter page. So far, which players have you felt really good about your picks? Like, which ones you're like, oh, man, I'm super confident. We nailed this pick already.
I mean, I'm really happy with Kawhi Leonard as the best player in the game. I think it speaks volumes to the fact that we know he is. He's proven that. Obviously, he's still in his load manager and stuff. But, you know, we expected a little bit of conjecture, some Giannis fans, some James Harden fans, some LeBron fans. And for me, you know, I'm incredibly happy. And obviously, there's some guys that I'm probably a little bit disappointed with in the sense of, you know, we've got some guys that probably might be a little bit too high, guys that we were a little bit low on. But we based off and we've explained our sort of criteria at length. But I think the top 10, top 20 of our list, you know, we are probably Pascal Siakam, looking at him overall, is the guy who has absolutely shone to start this season. And we were quite high on him. You know, we had him in the 20s, and a lot of other people probably wouldn't. But he's producing that. And if anything, he's probably going to push into the teens if he keeps playing like this.
Yeah, I mean, Pascal Siakam is the first name that sticks out. We had him as 20th, and I know a lot of people are like, well, wow, that's way too high. And we were just, again, our list was projecting as much as it was, what have you done for us lately, playoffs included, and then projecting what we thought they were going to do to start the year. And as we've mentioned, this list will be updated based on this year, you know, 2-3 times more than likely. Siakam so far has looked like the 20th best guy. And obviously, you know, Blake Griffin hasn't played. Drew Holiday's missed some time. Kemba Walker hasn't been great. And Paul George hasn't played. So, like, Pascal Siakam could easily be, like, a mid-team player with how he started so far. So he's been solid. I've liked everything I've seen from him. You know, and honestly, Trae Young and Luka Doncic, both guys, we rather have been wrong than have been way too high on those guys early. And Luka Doncic and Trae Young both so far, obviously Trae Young's going to miss a couple games with that sprained ankle, but both those guys will likely shoot up and be top 30 players by the time we get this list updated in a couple months.
Where do you think those two guys, because Luka and Trae obviously are two guys that have really popped off to start the season, have kind of proved to you this year that, hey, we are top 30 players or arguably top 25 players. What in their game do you think has changed from last season to this season that's like, wow, okay, we're ready to pick you up?
Luka looks more like a guy, if that makes sense. I mean,
he's grown up now.
He has, in the sense that, you know, he looks more physically mature. He looks like the focal point, like he was last season, but he's more efficient. He's the go-to guy, and I think he's just doing all the same things, but in a more efficient fashion, and with the superstar teammate, and the team is experiencing more success, and that's coming off the back of him. And not to throw Corey under the bus, but I was a little bit higher on Luka Doncic, and we both were like, we've got to be conservative with these young guys, but I would have had Luka Doncic a little bit higher. But there's a lot of guys in here which makes it really, really tricky. And as for Trae Young has probably taken a bigger step forward than Luka Doncic has, because we know Luka Doncic can be an MVP contender, a top 15 possible player. Whereas Trae Young had all the doubts, obviously, at the start of the season, and was the end of season form just a flash in the pan? And obviously, it wasn't. And obviously, before spraining his ankle, he was leading the league in scoring. He was shooting the lights out like there was no other. And I think that is more than anything what people are sort of seeing from him. And he's probably taken that. It's not just a flash in the pan. It's consistent night after night. You know, the Stephen Curry and Steve Nash hybrid combination is the comparison that he seems to get. And with the passing ability he has, with the Nash-like sort of creativity and the shooting acumen of a guy like Stephen Curry, he's a very, very special player. And the Atlanta Hawks, and Corey's going to be having some fun watching that game, because Cam Reddish is going to be starting at point guard. So that's going to be a fun game.
Yeah, I mean, Luka Doncic, I know what you're saying, Jack. This has definitely looked like he's the face of a franchise, right? He's solidified himself as that. We knew he was going to be that guy. You know, probably the fact that he can facilitate. He's been a closer for them already late in games. Against the Nuggets in particular, he closed out that game after having a pretty bad shooting night. That's just like star level talent when a guy is kind of off all night, but then when it's money time, he shows up. And then Trae Young, he just looks like he knows he's that guy now. Like, I think at the early part of last year, he was still getting adjusted to the NBA speed, wasn't shooting so great. But, like, I mean, we've seen now, we talked about in the last episode, you know, he's hitting logo threes and shimmying before he shoots. Like, the level of confidence both those guys have is off the charts. Trae Young, ridiculously good passer. You know, he's been, obviously 38 points per game and averaging, I think, right around 10 assists. Both those guys have just solidified themselves as like confident guys, like guys who you can rely on in late game situations, which I think is what pushes them into the top 30.
Yeah, and it's resulting in positive things. So, and I think that's always a plus. But what guys would you say are your biggest drop so far? We're like, oh man, this guy fell off this summer. I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah, well, I mean, looking at the list, a guy like me, for me right now, and I don't think it is on him. I do expect him to bounce back. Is a guy like De'Aaron Fox. The Sacramento Kings have been really going through some stuff. Let's put it that way. You know, obviously Luke Walton is bearing a brunt of the blame. They're just not playing good basketball. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to watch a few of their games, and they don't look like they're in synergy. There's just almost too many guys. They don't have a system. And nothing has been figured out in that sort of sense of the word. So for me, that's probably the guy that I would probably drop a few spots. Maybe a Chris Middleton as well. Maybe we're a little bit too high on him, just purely because he is the modern sort of archetype of a 3-and-D wing guy. But, you know, obviously the Bucks have been struggling a little bit, and, you know, Chris Middleton has been a part of that too. And even a guy like Eric Bledsoe as well, who we've sort of talked about as well, who we were probably, you know, it was hard to analyze him. But as were all of those sort of guys. And Karis Severt struggled a little bit to start the season as well. Zach LaVine has had his moments, but he's been up and down, and the Bulls haven't really had that much team success. But I think overall, you know, having to project ahead with this list, we've done a relatively reasonable job not to pat ourselves on the back.
Yeah, I think like our biggest issue with the list is almost like just the guys in the 30s. Like, for example, Miles Turner, I think he's been disappointing. I mentioned this to you guys, when we saw each other yesterday. You know, he had a game against the Pistons where he played 39 minutes and had zero defensive rebounds. That's bad for a center. Aaron Gordon's only averaging 9 points per game right now for the Orlando Magic, shooting 35 and 33% from the field. That's a major drop off from what looked like a really promising end to last year for him. You mentioned De'Aaron Fox. He obviously hasn't been super impressive. Mike Conley couldn't hit a jump shot till like last night. So he's been rather disappointing. A lot of the guys in the 30s for us have just played like well under what we saw them producing at the end of last year, which has probably been the most surprising thing for me.
Yeah, I would say probably between the 30s and 40s, but you guys really nailed the top 25. You know, there's not really many things you change in the top 25 other than injuries, and I think that's the most important thing. The guys that we've talked about have either been older guys in weird roles or young guys who have just taken that major jump that, hey, it was a possibility they take it. Like, there was definitely a big chance Trae and Luka would take that jump. Then also probably a guy like Devin Booker took a big jump this year as well. There's always a possibility, but hey, you went a little bit more conservative on them, that's fine.
Yeah, and I think Andre Drummond, we have him 48th, and like Porzingis 50. Both those guys have been really good so far. Obviously, Porzingis being the number two to Luka in Dallas, and Andre Drummond having to kind of carry the Pistons without Blake Griffin has been a double-double machine.
Yeah, and he's picked up his defense too. I think Kristaps is a really interesting one. Based off of what we've seen so far, which is an extremely small sample size, where do you think he'll be by the next time you do this ranking?
In a couple of months' time, I'd probably have him somewhere in the 30s. And it's hard for me to sort of gauge whether that's early 30s and then pushing into the late 20s or is that late 30s. And I think because Luka Doncic is the perfect teammate to have alongside him, I wouldn't be surprised if his ceiling is pretty high. They are the perfect complementary duo, and the Dallas Mavericks have got a special duo over there. They're going to be doing some good things in the Western Conference for a long time. And, you know, I think Kristaps just needs to find his footing. He is a defensive dynamo when he is on, and I think he's still finding, you know, his confidence in that area of the floor, because he can be absolutely dominant on that end. We know what he can do as an offensive sort of perimeter threat. You know, he's incredibly talented. Yeah, as a guy who is 7'3", it's tremendous what he can do with the ball in his hands. But, you know, if his defense can improve, for me, that is the most scary part, and that's where his ceiling resides.
Yeah, I think he's probably mid-30s to like, knocking on the door of top 30. Because, you know, look at, like, guys like Miles Turner, Aaron Gordon, Connolly, D'Angelo Russell. You know, I think he's been clear-cut better than all those guys at this point. And if those guys don't pick it up, I think Porzingis kind of takes one of their spots because, again, he's going to have plenty of touches. The rebounding will come. The defense, he gives good rim protection. Is there going to be more added to his defensive game? Will probably be the biggest question mark. But he's definitely going to have every opportunity with Dallas because, as I've mentioned a few times on this pod, I'm just not very wowed by Dallas' supporting cast. Obviously, they've had a couple good games. But this is going to be a team that's driven heavily by Luka and Porzingis.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And I think the one thing that makes, you know, Porzingis so intriguing is he's getting back to 100% basketball shape. He hasn't played basketball in a year. At times, he looks stiff, not quite as athletic as we saw him the last time on the court. So he'll be a guy to keep an eye on, like the other names you guys mentioned. But anything else you want to throw in there before we get out of here?
I mean, is Malcolm Brogdon going to be number one on this list next time we do it, Corey?
Nah, but he might be a top 50 player. That's for sure.
He's played like one so far this season. I think if you lead the league in assists and you're essentially the number one option on a team, you're pretty close to being top 50. But we'll save that for another day. As always, a pleasure, guys, talking hoops. You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.
Later, knuckleheads.